Happy Budget Day, everyone, and hello and welcome to the A-Level Politics Show podcast. Thank you for tuning in to this episode, this free episode. If you like what you hear, then why not subscribe if you haven't already to Plus Plus Plus. For just £1.99 a month, you get 2 bonus podcasts each month, plus complete unfettered access to the full back catalogue of shows spanning almost 5 years. You can subscribe through Spotify. You don't actually have to be a Spotify subscriber first. And if you listen through other podcast apps like Apple Podcasts, just cut and paste the RSS feed that you get in your subscriber email and plonk it there to listen. Full transcripts of each show are available on Spotify. And don't forget to participate in the after show polls and send us feedback for show suggestions and the like. Right, on with today's show. Today, we will focus on the Prime Minister and Executive topic. We will broaden out from the usual how powerful is the Prime Minister question and look at the Executive more broadly, since its specific powers are mentioned in the specification, and thus you need to know what the Executive is, what it does, and the limits that are placed upon it. Put simply, the Executive is another word for government, so I will use them interchangeably. For our purposes, the Executive consists of the Prime Minister, the Cabinet and junior ministers. The Executive is served by the wider personnel and institutions of state, most notably civil servants, the most important of whom is the Cabinet Secretary, who is the most senior civil servant and advises the Prime Minister, as well as government departments in which the civil servants operate. I've used the word most there quite a lot, haven't I? Right. The powers of the Executive, the government, consist of, but are not limited to, A, proposing legislation, B, making policy decisions based on unforeseen circumstances, the so-called doctor's mandate, C, adjusting existing law through secondary legislation or statutory instruments, I abbreviate them to SIs, D, proposing a budget, and E, the royal prerogative. I will explain each of these in turn, give examples of how they allow the executive to dominate the political system, and then show the limits of these powers too. The question we will answer today is this: evaluate the view that the executive faces few constraints on its powers. I will argue that it faces many constraints. First up, we will focus on proposing legislation. Okay, so the first power we're going to look at is the executive power to propose legislation. Bills are introduced to Parliament and are often based on the governing party's manifesto commitments. The government will write the King's speech, which the King then reads out at the state opening of Parliament. Details of the bills the government will try to enact through Parliament are contained in this speech. The governing party will have received a mandate from the electorate, which means that it has the authority to govern and implement its promises in this King's speech. Due to the first-past-the-post system, there's a synoptic link there because first-past-the-post is a paper one word and this is a paper two topic. Just use one paper one word somewhere in your non-source-based essay and that unlocks the door for level five. Let me start the sentence again. Due to the first-past-the-post system, the governing party often enjoys a winner's bonus and comfortably controls the majority of seats in Parliament. Boris Johnson's 80-seat majority after the 2019 general election gave his government the mandate to get Brexit done, and thus the party introduced the EU withdrawal bill to Parliament, which was passed at the end of January 2020, just a month after that election. In addition, a manifesto commitment is protected by the Salisbury Convention, the practice whereby the unelected House of Lords does not hold up such a bill from passing. The power to initiate legislation often extends well beyond that which is in the government's manifesto, however. The executive claims the right to propose legislation and implement policy as problems arise, as problems come up. It's what we call the doctor's mandate. After Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the spike in energy prices that came after it, the government announced in its 2023 King's speech that it supports the future licensing of new oil and gas fields, a provision not contained in its manifesto. Furthermore, different leaders will seek to change the legislative direction in a way that they want, regardless of whether that direction reflects a manifesto. Witness Rishi Sunak's push to introduce an advanced British standard in a shake-up to further and higher education, the proposals for which were also announced in the same 2023 King's speech I just mentioned. Having the power to initiate legislation, to start legislation, gives the executive huge influence over suggesting laws and, through its majority in Parliament, a big advantage over passing them. Yet there are limits to this power of initiating. A government may not have a majority of seats in the House of Commons and then have a questionable mandate to govern. Theresa May's proposals to expand grammar schools were scrapped after the 2017 election saw the Tories return to office in a minority government. There may not be enough parliamentary time to pass all the proposals that the executive wants to, or the manifesto may have been poorly thought out, thus making the crafting of bills by government departments particularly difficult. The Institute of Government estimated at the end of 2021 that 41 pledges contained in the Conservative government's manifesto in 2019 were at risk of either failure, delay, suspension, or abandonment. Herein comes the other potential problem with the doctor's mandate and unforeseen circumstances. They may throw the government off course. The executive has been attempting to tackle the issue of inflation ever since the tail end of COVID, which has meant less of a focus on NHS waiting lists. In addition, any proposed law not in the government's manifesto faces plenty of scrutiny in the House of Lords. At the time of recording, the Lords is giving extensive scrutiny to the Safety of Rwanda Bill, which represents an attempt by the Sunak government to declare Rwanda a safe country to send asylum seekers to, even though the UK Supreme Court has ruled otherwise. Yet there are other ways to dominate the political system aside from initiating legislation, whether that legislation be in the government's manifesto or be as a result of circumstances. The executive can try and avoid Parliament altogether. Another such way the executive can control the Parliament is through secondary legislation, or what some call statutory instruments. I abbreviate these to SIs. These are powers given to ministers in primary legislation that allow them to make minor changes to the law without parliamentary say-so. Many are concerned that the powers returning to the UK following Brexit, say on fishing quotas, will bypass Parliament and simply be wielded by the executive. They have been collectively referred to as Henry VIII powers, since they seem to give the executive authority over large swathes of policy without parliamentary consent. Well over 600 SIs were made to give effect to Brexit, according to the UCL's Constitution Unit, and around 500 in relation to the COVID pandemic. Yet there are limits to statutory instruments, to SIs. When it comes to secondary legislation, the House of Lords often scrutinises primary legislation and whether ministers should be given powers to lay down specific SIs. In May 2023, the Lords defeated the government over the retained EU law bill, adding amendments that would, if accepted, allow the scrapping of EU laws, many of which were written into UK law, only once they face scrutiny in parliamentary committees. So what the Lords were saying there was it should not be for ministers to simply wield an SI pen and scrap an EU law. It should be for Parliament to consider on a case-by-case basis. The use of secondary legislation is also more likely to be the subject of a court challenge and claims that ministers are acting beyond their power, what you might call ultra vires, if you know your Latin, especially if the law is vague and fails to clearly indicate specifically what action ministers can or can't take without Parliament. Rights group Liberty has taken the UK executive to court over Suella Braverman's decision as Home Secretary, whereby she used an SI to lower the threshold for the police to impose restrictions on protests, despite this SI being rejected by the Lords. Excessive use of SIs can also lead to charges that the government is operating an elective dictatorship and lead to pushback from MPs. The executive also proposes a budget in the form of a finance bill, which nearly always sails through Parliament unscathed. The budget outlines how the government proposes to raise revenue and is drawn up by the Chancellor in conjunction with the Prime Minister. The budget affects the spending of each government department. The government gets to decide what goes into these finance bills. For example, the 2022 Finance Act extended tax relief for orchestras, museums, galleries, and exhibitions. The 2024 budget I'm going to take a leap here. I'm recording about an hour before the budget is announced. But the 2024 budget, I'm going to say, cut national insurance. So you might want to check that out to see if that is correct. But if the leaks are to be believed, that's what Jeremy Hunt will do. The executive can dominate the legislative passage of a budget because, as mentioned earlier, it often has a Commons majority. In addition, the Parliament Act 1911 gave the Commons financial privilege, which means that the unelected Lords cannot block a money bill. However, a budget handled badly can lead to policy U-turns and weaken the executive. While the government can control the budget, it is also subject to far greater scrutiny when a budget is mishandled. George Osborne's so-called Omnishambles budget had to be unpicked owing to a number of unpopular policies, including a tax on Cornish pasties. And Kwasi Kwarteng's mini-budget in the autumn of 2022 resulted in a run on sterling, and many of the measures thence had to be dropped as international markets raised alarm that the proposed tax cuts were unfunded. It ultimately resulted in Kwarteng sacking and Truss having to resign also as she lost support of her parliamentary colleagues in Parliament. In addition, the Lords can sometimes thwart the executive when considering a bill that may have financial implications and which was not contained in a manifesto. In 2015, it blocked government plans to reduce working tax credits. We must also consider the unity of the governing party. If it is divided, the Chancellor will need to consider what they are politically able to propose in a budget. Chancellor Jeremy Hunt's budget in March 2024 attempted to appease the New Right Tories, who favoured cuts in income tax, with One Nation Tories and pragmatists who feared that they would be unaffordable and that the subsequent cuts to public services in order to fund them would be too severe. Hence why the less expensive national insurance cut. Everything I've just said may actually not be correct if Jeremy Hunt decides to change tack. If the leaks are to be believed, though, that's exactly what happened. I'm recording an hour before the budget has been announced, so do check those stats, those figures out. Finally, we need to consider the royal prerogative. Now, the royal prerogative consists of a number of powers that the Prime Minister inherited from the monarch. Perhaps the most consequential power is that the Prime Minister is the de facto commander-in-chief of the armed forces. De facto means in all but name. In theory, they can declare war. They can launch military action without parliamentary approval. And in practice, Sunak authorised the bombing of the Houthi rebels, for example, in January 2024. The Prime Minister is also the de facto chief diplomat and can shape international relations how they see fit. Despite parliamentary concerns about Saudi Arabia's human rights record, we now know through investigatory journalism and the use of FOI requests that the Johnson government sought to maintain a close relationship with Saudi Arabia and even promoted its takeover of Newcastle United Football Club. Sunak has sought perhaps a different tone in his dealings with the EU to Johnson, seeking to address the consequences of Brexit in Northern Ireland and the problems of the Northern Ireland Protocol by signing the Windsor Agreement with the EU in March 2023. So diplomacy has taken on a more dovish tone, I think, with the EU under the Sunak government compared to Johnson. The royal prerogative also allows the Prime Minister to call an election at any point within 5 years of the previous election, a power that was restored to them in the Dissolution and Calling of Parliaments Act 2022, which scrapped the Fixed Terms Parliament Act 2011. Prime Ministers look to hold an election at a time that they can exact maximum advantage, i.e. when the polls are favourable. This gives them a big advantage. John Major went long in the 1992 election to allow Tory attacks on Labour's spending plans to cut through to voters. Prime Ministers can also prorogue Parliament, which allows them to suspend Parliament for a short time and then reopen it with a new King's Speech, which helps the executive to reset and reclaim the legislative agenda if bills are stuck in legislative quagmire. However, there are limits to the Prime Minister's royal prerogative. Regarding the royal prerogative more broadly, it is unthinkable that a government would take the country to war with boots on the ground without first seeking parliamentary approval, not since Blair set the precedent for doing so over Iraq, and Cameron subsequently allowed two votes on action in Syria, one of which he lost. The use of the royal prerogative since Iraq has been limited to short and targeted operations with regards to the Prime Minister's commander-in-chief power, rather than the prolonged use of service personnel on the ground. regarding the calling of an election, the resumption of uncertainty around a specific election date can seriously hamper government planning, since it is difficult to know whether it is worth initiating new legislation if a parliament is suddenly dissolved. Prime ministers who abuse the royal prerogative are likely to have their wings clipped. Theresa May lost the Miller 1 case before the Supreme Court in 2017, a case which confirmed that parliamentary sovereignty took precedence over the royal prerogative when it came to approving or withdrawing from international treaties, in this instance, treaties the UK had signed with the EU. Johnson's prorogation of Parliament during the high-stakes Brexit votes in 2019 was ruled unlawful in the Miller 2 case. The right to call an election also might be a double-edged sword. Major regrets going long again in 1997, since Tory unpopularity grew still further the longer he delayed. Sunak risks a similar dilemma in 2024. A recent Ipsos poll has his net approval at minus 54, an even worse rating than Liz Truss endured at the end of her short-lived premiership. So if he waits to call an election, yes, it could get better for the Tories. It could get even worse. So I'm not entirely sure having the right to call an election is necessarily a power that prime ministers want, even if they think they want it. Thus, while it is correct that the executive wields immense power over initiating legislation, proposing budgets, enacting policy without Parliament through the use of SIs and by utilising the royal prerogative, the reality is that the forces of constraint can hamper each power. A strong executive must still live within the realms of political reality. Does the governing party have a majority? Is that party unified? Are there circumstances that blow the legislative agenda off course? Can the leader assert their authority over Parliament and the wider political system? With the exception of claiming majority, I think it is fair to say that the current UK executive is finding it difficult to govern. It doesn't have a unified party behind it. The circumstances of COVID and then Ukraine and the subsequent inflation has blown it off course. The leader lacks authority partly because we've had three prime ministers since the 2019 general election. But what do you think? Does the executive have too few constraints on its power? Why not take part in the end of podcast poll in the show notes, Spotify only for the moment. I look forward to seeing how the votes tally. Okay, folks, enjoy Budget Day. That's today, if you're listening today. Until the next time, take care. Bye-bye.